And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we've entered the lame duck period in Congress. The election is over. The old legislature still sits, and the new legislature won't be sworn in until January. The Democrats have been talking about raising the debt ceiling. The Republicans have been talking about using the debt ceiling as a way to leverage power and kill anything they don't like about the Biden proposals.
Also to kill Social Security and Medicare.
That's exactly right. And the threat being that they will renege on the debt that the United States has already run up. Why didn't they raise the debt ceiling? Why haven't they scheduled that for a vote, the Democrats?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense in terms of good governance. What it may be is just politics saying, well, okay, when the Republicans take over, the first thing they're going to do is screw up everything, and we want the people to see how they screw up. But that's playing a dangerous game with the betterment of the country. It may just be that the Democrats are just, you know, fatigued about all of this stuff. They also haven't passed that Reform Act on elections and how they're counted that they pledged to do in the lame duck session.
Is it still possible that they will do it, or have they made the announcements that they will not do it?
I haven't heard any announcement that they will not do that. I just don't know how much time is left. You know, it's interesting because on some items, you hear that things go through very quickly. And on other items, you hear that it can't be done, you know, quickly, that it has to go through all these other things. And I think that contributes to the public cynicism. If you can do one thing so quickly, why can't you do another quickly? And it's a good question. It's a very good question. I know there are processes and there's things out there. You know, I just saw something that they passed the Defense Authorization Bill. You know, that has to be done every 2 years, according to the Constitution, funding the military.
Well, they have to pass the raising of the debt ceiling also.
Well, but that is by their choice to do that. They could pass an automatic raising type of thing. That's not constitutional. But the defense thing, and where I was going with it is, they actually added another $45 million beyond what was requested. Again, $45 billion. So, why can't you fund other things?
They also removed the mandate that the Pentagon wanted for the troops to wear masks.
Yes. the Republicans insist on that. Or it was vaccination. It was vaccinations.
So the generals are saying, we don't want our troops sick. We want them healthy. Therefore, we want them vaccinated and we want them to wear masks. And the Republicans say, you can't do it. When did Marjorie Taylor Greene graduate from West Point?
You know,
I wasn't invited to the ceremony.
I've got a buddy who's a retired Air Force colonel or lieutenant colonel, and I asked him when all this nonsense was going around, and he said, "Dave, you have no idea how many shots I've taken over my career." He said, "Every time we got assigned overseas, it was a whole set of shots, depending on where you were going." Nobody said boo, and no one had the right to say boo. Either you did it, or you got punished.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, it's a little bit preposterous. If the legislature has the right to intervene on that, why can't they intervene on where you station a platoon in the midst of a battle?
Well, that's a good question. Or call in Donald Trump to tell you because he knows more than the generals. Remember that line?
He said, yes, I know more than the generals. Well, you know who also believed that? Adolf Hitler. He insisted on being in tactical control of key battles on the Eastern Front.
Well, we now have Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, another, that's right.
Running the military, so to speak. And maybe we should be grateful that guys like Hitler and Putin fail, ultimately. You know, they could have they could do a lot of damage, though, until they fail.
Well, they do a lot of damage. Everything they do is damaging.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, I think it's long past time for the Democrats to, well, we know, communicate better, but they really have to go after the Republican brand. The Republicans, it said, everybody knows what they stand for. Tax breaks for the rich. They're against any social progress, civil rights and voting rights and things like that. But the Democrats have been handed a whole host of layups, so to speak, and they won't take the shots. They really need to get out there. And over time, remember, Falk's rule number one is to think long term. You have to keep pounding in that the Republicans are against they're back on going after Social Security.
Well, they've made it very clear that their aim, Rick Scott, head of the Senatorial Campaign Committee, made it clear as day. He said it. He wants to end Medicare. He wants to end Social Security. That's his point. That's what they stand for. If you don't trumpet that every day, if you're a Democrat, you're not doing your job.
Right. And they should be doing it in articles. They should be doing it in print. They should continue to have ads going up. And so particularly social media now, where it costs nothing to do that. Every time they interview someone who's in the Democratic Party as office holders, they should be saying, working that in. The Republicans are very disciplined on messaging. The Democrats can't even figure out messaging at times.
And McCormick, I'm sorry, McCormick, McCarthy made it clear that he wants to hold the debt ceiling as the way to knock out Social Security and Medicare. He's going to trade the one for the other. He'll pay the debts that the United States has already incurred, because the bills have already been paid. Now they just got to raise the money to make good the bank account, so when people come to cash the check, there's money to cash the check. He's made it clear that it's Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid that he wants ended. Why? That's what the debt ceiling problem is. Why didn't they pass the debt ceiling so that he couldn't do that?
Again, I don't know, or only to make these guys look bad. But remember,
they make them look bad. Meanwhile, you got 30% of the 40% of the population dependent on these programs.
Yeah. Because they're not going to do away with Social Security and Medicare.
How do you know?
Well, if the Democrats...
After all, we didn't have it at one time. Why can't we not have it another time?
Well, if the Democrats ever agreed to that, they might as well forget about being a party as an alternate to the Republicans. And although, you know, it's interesting that the Republican constituency is older white people, and who seem to be pretty smug in their views of the Republicans, but don't want, you know, keep the government's hands off my Medicare.
Yeah. Do you think any of those people grasp that this is a government program? Half of them think they got it from God.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's the thing, you know. It's been there so long that it's taken for granted. It's one of those things, you don't miss it until it's gone.
Yeah.
You don't miss it until it's gone.
And plus, which most of them have been convinced that Medicaid anyway is just for black people, so why should they care? Right. Although most of the people on Medicaid are white.
Yeah. And it's Medicaid that's keeping a lot of rural hospitals and local hospitals open.
It's the only thing keeping them open. The only thing. I mean, and there's a lot you can criticize the Medicaid program for. It's not a very good program. But without any program?
Well, you know, first first of all, McCarthy's got to get to be the speaker.
But and if it's not McCarthy, it'll be another right winger, right?
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. You know, if it's going to be someone farther to the right of him, you're starting to see some level of revolt in the Republican Party about that. But I don't know. With the new Congress, they get fewer and fewer Republicans that are willing to stand up to the crazies. We'll just have to see.
Let's face it. The Republican Party coming into the House of Representatives is a fascist party. There's 109 members of that party who voted not to certify the last presidential election and who support Trump in saying whatever he says. It doesn't matter what he says. Forget the steal, but whatever he says, they'll support him. And Trump is a neo-fascist. And they are just like him. And when you get to people like Gosar or Getz or Taylor Greene, you're dealing with, you know, the American Taliban. They're going to control the House. The House is going to be, for the first time in your life and in my life, controlled by a fascist party. Now, it's true, they don't have a program for legislation except to undo things. But they certainly have a program for disrupting the life of working class Americans. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to attack Democrats or to elevate things that really are fairly minor, trivial to the headline status, at least to feed their media friends.
Yeah. Do you think Kevin McCarthy is not going to get the speakership?
I'm not convinced he is. I mean, right now he's got the best odds, but I'm not convinced that it's a sure thing. As I say, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And who was it this week? Andy Biggs said he's going to run.
Yeah, Biggs from Arizona, one of Marjorie Taylor Greene's great allies. He's going to run against McCarthy. He is running against McCarthy.
Yeah. So the way this is being gamed out is either A, McCarthy has the votes, gets to 218, or B, he gets stopped on that. It's not going to be Biggs or that wing of the party. The alternate is that in some manner or form, a sufficient number of Republicans from the non-crazy parts will get together with the 213 Democrats and agree on some Republican who's palatable enough to both parties to elect, because you can't elect. I mean, there's not going to be a Democrat elected. Something like that happened in Pennsylvania a number of years ago, where the Democrats wound up electing a very moderate Republican as their leader, and it was a backroom deal, to keep things going, and it only lasted, one term. So we'll have to see. I mean,
let's assume what you're saying happens, that somehow enough Democrats can be rounded up to support enough Republicans to get somebody to a majority vote, right? You know, the progressive Democrats, or many of them, won't go along with it, right? That's not going to happen. They're never going to vote for a Republican speaker. So it'll have to be the people like the Problem Solvers Caucus, the Blue Dog Democrats. Somehow Hakeem Jeffries is going to have to find enough of those if he's going to go along with this idea to put it together with some number, 50, 60 Republicans, right? What does he get for it?
Well, that's the sausage is being made, okay? He gets a pledge that certain things will not be brought up to the floor or that they do increase the debt ceiling and some other concession. And we'll see. We don't know. You know, we'll know in a few weeks.
Oh, we'll definitely know in a few weeks.
We'll know in a few weeks, and that's an eternity in politics these days. I mean, look what happened this week. You know, we had Raphael Warnock got elected by a larger margin than he won in the initial vote, but he didn't get 50%.
He won the runoff with nearly 3 points, 2.9 points.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a bad victory.
Well, in Georgia, it's not.
No.
In Georgia, it's not. And still, a lot of Republicans voted for Herschel Walker, but a lot of them wouldn't vote for him.
Walker's vote was down. I mean, the absolute vote was down.
Yeah. But that always happens in the runoffs. But the Republicans won everything else in Georgia. So, but they're the Raffensperger type of Republicans that won, not the crazies, except for Marjorie Taylor Greene in her district. So, anyhow, on that. But then the Democrats didn't have long to rejoice because we had Kyrsten Sinema come out and say that she's leaving the Democratic Party.
Maybe they should rejoice.
Maybe they should rejoice. You know, some people would say, "What took her so long?"
This is a woman who started out in the Green Party.
Yes.
And has switched from the Green Party to the Democratic Party. And has switched from the Democratic Party to no party.
Right.
Because she says the parties are dysfunctional. Yeah. But what we've just been saying is the parties are very functional. I mean, Mitch McConnell manages to get every member of the Republican caucus voting one way. That's pretty functional.
Yeah. She's the one that's been dysfunctional.
That's right.
You never figure out where she stands or what.
Well, no. On two matters, she's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
She feels that the drug industry should be allowed to charge whatever the private owners of the drug industry want to charge. My brother, by the way, who's getting a cancer treatment, is charged $7,800 a month for a pill.
It's outrageous.
A pill, right, exactly. A month.
And
she says, yeah, that's right, whatever. And people who work as stockbrokers and hedge fund people, they shouldn't be taxed.
Well, yeah. Well, and the other thing is she won't do away with the filibuster.
Well, naturally, because if you did away with the filibuster, then that would be done away with.
Yeah. But it's interesting that she's not caucusing with the Democrats. She's not caucusing with the Republicans. You know, the other two independents, Bernie and Angus King, caucus with the Democrats.
If she caucused, she'd have to go to meetings. This way, she doesn't have to ever go to a meeting.
No. But it puts the Democrats in a dilemma. Number one, because they, on certain things, they may still need her vote. They've said that they're going to keep her on her committee assignments. Chuck Schumer said that. That she has, in other respects, voted with the Democrats. She's voted for every single one of Joe Biden's judges.
She's got the 93% voting record for the Biden proposals, whatever they may be, 93%.
You know, Mitch McConnell made his bid to try to get her to switch to Republican. You remember that speech he gave praising her to the Hill, saying she's the most effective first-term senator he's ever seen, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, for her to become a Republican doesn't really help her either in those things.
No, because the Republicans in Arizona are not going to support her.
Yeah, but the problem now is for the Democrats in Arizona, because Ruben Gallegos, the congressman from there, was intending to primary her and had a very good chance of winning the primary. Now she has no primary opponent if she runs as an independent. But in the general election, who does she take votes from? In a three-way split between a Democrat, her as a sitting senator, as an independent, and the Republican, I think you might wind up with a Senator Carrie Lake, for gosh sakes. And that's a dilemma. That's a dilemma. That is, if Carrie Lake's lawsuit that she brought this week doesn't succeed and naming her as governor.
But that's not going to happen, right?
Right, that's not going to happen. And number two, if she doesn't wind up on a ticket with Donald Trump.
I don't think that'll happen either.
Oh,
but
who knows?
You don't know. You don't
She'll be the new Sarah Palin of the party.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that there could be someone worse than Sarah Palin in the party, but...
Well, no, you can be worse. I mean, Sarah Palin's an asshole. You could have somebody who has rational but reactionary ideas. After, I mean, Carrie Lake, I don't know anything about her. I've never heard her speak. I don't know if she's rational or not.
Well, the things she speaks about in terms of the election and stealing, she's certainly not rational.
No.
And she, you know, well, we'll just have to see. I'd rather talk a lot less about Carrie Lake and some other things that have happened this week.
No, but it's interesting because the analog to what you're talking about is Utah, where in this election, the Democrats didn't put up a candidate, and they supported Evan McMillan. And he didn't get elected.
No. He pulled a good vote. He got about 44%, but he didn't get elected. But the Democrats knew they weren't going to get elected.
But who would the Democrats support? Who would the Arizona Democrats support in the face of Sinema as against a Republican who would very likely be somebody like Carrie Lake or Finkham or, you know, one of those people?
Yeah, well, that's the conundrum. And also, if you don't run a candidate in order to prevent a in order to prevent a Carrie Lake, what does that say about your party? How do you build a party with saying in a major state like Arizona saying, you know, we're not going to run someone because we don't want to split the vote?
This is a real weakness of the first past the gate post the electoral system and of an election law that really tolerates only two parties.
Well, you can tolerate two parties, but I think you're going to see movement towards this ranked choice voting thing. That look what happened in Alaska.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a model.
Yeah.
California has something somewhat similar, not quite. Maine, you know, comes to mind. Don't forget, Paul LePage won two elections because there was a split between the Democrat and a former Democrat who ran as an independent twice and screwed the state by getting Paul LePage elected.
And by the way, it's happening in Pennsylvania, the move to ranked choice voting, because in Allegheny County, where they have to choose a new member because the guy who got elected died before the election and they couldn't take his name off the ballot. But the dead man got 85% of the vote. Turns out he can't serve. So the Democrats and the Republicans have to choose new candidates, and the Democrats announced that they're going to use ranked choice voting to decide who their candidate will be.
Well, that's good. You only have to go to the polls once, and it forces people to think about alternatives.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works. You know, in Pennsylvania now, the Republicans are backing off after first of all, voting for mail-in voting, and then trashing it because of Donald Trump, and now getting trashed in two successive election cycles. They're now rethinking and starting to say, you know, maybe we should encourage our people to vote in this rigged system of mail-in voting.
Yeah.
Wake up, you know. This is what's happening. This is the way it is.
That's their problem. They're always looking to rig the system. They're always looking to make sure that democracy isn't democratic. So they chose one way to do it. It didn't work. Now they chose another way to do it. That didn't work. So they'll try a third way to do it to see if they can make it not work. After all,
their first priority is to undermine democracy and the Democrats.
That's right. Make sure that whatever working people need, they don't get. That's the key.
Right.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
Party for working people.
Yeah.
Without that.
And which brings me to the Supreme Court case that was argued the other day on Wednesday, the case about the so-called independent legislature theory. I'm sure you've been following that.
Right. And of course, which would be, let all these dysfunctional legislators decide who gets the electoral votes of that particular state. No matter what, you know, in the extreme, it's and nobody on the court that I heard asked the one question, that being, for instance, a state like Pennsylvania, where Joe Biden won by 80,000 votes. Could the legislature then declare that Donald Trump was the winner and authorize only the Republican slate of electors to go in December to the Electoral College and vote that way?
Well, the answer is yes.
Apparently, that's
the answer is yes, because the theory says that the legislature can do whatever it wants to do. It is unconstrained by anybody. It's unconstrained by the federal constitution and by the state constitution. It can do whatever it wants to do, and there is no appeal to anybody. The appeal is, you don't like it, vote them out next time around.
Yeah. As Neil Katyal argued, he said that this is an interesting theory that no one ever thought of or tried to implement for over 230 years.
Right. That's right. But the argument on the part of the Republicans was, this is how it always should have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Retroactive. Apply it.
Yeah.
They have three votes for that. Three, you know, Alito.
They may have four votes for it.
Of course, Gorsuch and whatever. Yeah.
They got Alito. They got Thomas. They got Gorsuch. Whether or not they have Kavanaugh is an open question.
Question, and they don't.
Now they don't know what they may have to make to get Roberts, or get Coney Barrett.
Yeah. Now Roberts is very, very shifty in these things. He will do anything to prevent Democrats from prevailing on a vote, mm-hmm. but he does it in a manner that makes it look like he's being reasonable. The thinking is that he will fashion some sort of a remedy that won't go to the extreme, but that will prevent good things from happening.
Well, that's the method by which Roe versus Wade was ultimately undone.
Right. I mean, even when he voted to uphold the Affordable Care Act, he did it by undermining the Commerce Clause.
Right.
That can be used now as precedent somewhere else. What it'll basically do is, what it looks like they may do is say, well, the legislature can't do this, but the courts don't have the power to fashion a remedy. And it's got to be fashioned by a different remedy has to be fashioned by the legislature. In other words, the court can declare what the legislature did as unconstitutional or invalid, but they can't create something that is valid.
I think that Coney Barrett would sign on to that. That's right. Yeah. And that's the beginning of the ski slope.
Right. Right.
Well, you have a system, American democracy, which is only electoral, which is skewed so that whoever has the money has, you know, it's rigged in that person's favor or that group's favor.
Yeah.
Now you'll undermine it even further. What are they going to campaign on? What's the foreign policy going to be based on if it can't be freedom and democracy?
Well, you heard about whoever has the money. And this week we learned that there's, in addition to what the Federalist Society has done in terms of training and moving judges into the system and up to the Supreme Court, that there have been these right-wing groups that have organized and paid a lot of money to get people to socialize with Supreme Court justices and to essentially have one-on-one sessions with them, even on cases that are being decided. And there's apparently enough that Alito leaked the Hobby Lobby decision before it even came out. He denies it, but the person who says it seems to have some good knowledge and insight. And the Supreme Court consistently refuses to impose an ethics program on itself. The standard always in the law is if you have even the appearance of conflict of interest, you should recuse yourself. And these folks don't even seem to acknowledge that that the appearance exists.
That's because they're thoroughly disreputable people.
Yeah.
They're not honorable. Anyway, we're done with this for today. We have to go on to next week. There's about 10 items that we were going to talk about that we didn't get to, but we can get to them next week. But in the meantime, something will happen this coming week that we'll have to talk about. So I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.